cut into the middle of our, well, not the middle exactly, but we're underway when they come on. So we're going to wait until 9:05.
Chairman?
Okay.
Your microphones good. Are live.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the May 8th San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you read the changes to the agenda, please?
Certainly. Changes to the agenda is addendum to item number 1. Staff is recommending a correction. 1, to set the matter for public hearing on May 22, 2012, not May 15, 2012, and add an additional notice of public hearing. Addendum to item 28, the staff report replaces the staff report contained in the board's packet on the May 8th meeting. The original recommendations for funding of specific agencies and programs intended to implement the ESG program activities has been removed, as those recommendations will be brought forward to your board at a later date. This item is a request to approve a resolution amending the 2010, 11, and 12 action plans of the Urban County of San Luis Obispo to reallocate community development block grant funds and allocate emergency solution grant funds and approve a budget adjustment in the amount of $15,870. An addendum to item number 29, staff recommends that the transmittal and staff report be replaced by the attached document to correct errors in the subject and recommendation. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied, as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. And those are your changes.
Very good. Thank you. With that, we'll move on to our consent agenda, and we'll open it to public comment. I have one request to speak on consent, Mr. Jeff Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Good morning, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a 35-plus-year county resident. And I wanted to speak with you this morning regarding consent item number 10. And this is a contract to develop a revitalization plan for the commercial core and surrounding areas in the community of Oceano. And what I'd like to say is this is really a plan to make a plan. Oceano has seen these kind of plans before. They're sitting on shelves in offices around the county. This is a consultant-centric contract, which really I question what the end product will be. Oceano has a rich history, and perhaps some of you gentlemen have read the book by Norm Hammond, Oceano, Atlantic City of the West. It's a great book, and I'd encourage you to take a look if you haven't. Since the early 1900s, Oceano's been recognized as a diamond in the rough. But for over 100 years, unlocking the potential has gone unrealized. So we fast forward to today, smart growth, Vision 2050, jobs, housing balance, walkable communities, a sense of place. And I wonder if these goals or visions will ever be realized in Oceano. It's funny because if you look in the book by Mr. Hammond, the original town center was right where today's county airport is. The Ocean View Terrace. It had a fountain park and a plaza for the community, really a town center. And so I'm asking your board to consider, in the context of these planning efforts, that the fundamental use of the nearly 60 acres, oceanfront acres, for an airport, for a pitch-and-putt airport, is really penalizing Oceano. This airport, not only is it a physical barrier, it separates the east side of town from the beach community, it's a regulatory nightmare in that the presence of the airport and the safety zones and flyover zones are frustrating the Oceano-Pacific plan. The airport's been implicated in flooding, the December 2010 flood, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a later agenda item. But I would suggest to you that you know, to make the community whole, you must eliminate the airport. And that's something I'd like you to consider.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On item 13 is the acceptance of the completion of a couple bridges on San Simeon Creek Road, and that's a project long in the making. It goes back to my predecessor, Supervisor Bianchi. Lots of twists and turns on that, and I just wanted to thank everyone involved, Public Works and elsewhere, and the understanding and patience of the residents of San Simeon Creek Road to celebrate an excellent result. It's a beautiful rural road and now safe and passable with bridges. Also protects access to a very important communication facility the county has up at the top of the ridge there. And if I could, I'll just roll very quickly, and Mr. Edwards' comments reminded me, it is, in fact, celebrate Oceano Airport Day and weekend. Friday night, a dance. Saturday night, an event all day honoring veterans. A great community down there and a wonderful asset to the community of Oceano, going to be rightfully celebrated. Come on down. Drive in, fly in. Lots of things to do. Lima 52, Oceano Airport.
Great. Thank you, Supervisor Gibson. Supervisor Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson. Item 27 calls out the retirement of the bonds in the job that Mr. Seaback and Mr. Erb do in their department. Just like to commend them for it and this county staff for a job well done. These ratings show that San Luis County is one of the select few counties in California with such solid financial management record. I think that's a big gold star for us and the quality of people that we have working for the county. We're one of four. There's only like three or four that are ahead of us in all the 58 counties in California. So, again, thank you to staff and management for what they've done.
Okay. Thank you for pointing that out, Supervisor Teixeira. We're quite proud of our staff and boards for keeping us fiscally whole.
With that, I'll move approval of the consent as amended.
Okay. Moved and seconded that we approve the consent calendar as amended. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes. Okay. We have no afternoon session today, so we are going to move into the presentation calendar, and we have a number of presentations this morning. And I'll accept a motion for the presentation calendar. Okay, moved and seconded that we adopt the presentation calendar. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes. And we'll begin with Supervisor Gibson and Bike to Work and School Week.
It is Bike to Work and School Week, and if I could have Ms. Angela Nelson of the SLO Regional Rideshare to the lectern, it's my pleasure to read a resolution proclaiming May 2012 as Bike Month and May 14th to May 18th as Bike to Work and School Week in San Luis Obispo County. The resolution reads as follows. Whereas bicycle commuting is an effective means to reduce air pollution and conserve energy and promotes the livability of communities by reducing traffic, noise, and congestion. And whereas Bike Month 2012 is an inclusive request to people of all ages and abilities, whether veteran or novice, commuter or recreational rider, to ride bicycles to their destinations throughout San Luis Obispo County. And whereas Bike Month promotions such as Bike to Work and School Week and the Commuter Bike Competition encourages citizens to ride their bicycles, thereby reducing vehicular emissions in the county. And whereas the Executive Challenge creates a forum for leaders, business executives, management, directors, city council members, mayors, and the Board of Supervisors to use active transportation and lead by example on May 23rd, now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim May 2012 as Bike Month and May 14th to the 18th as Bike to Work and School Week.
Thank You need to call our hands.
Sorry, that's the price. That's the price of the reso. Yep, and I think you have a.
That's what it.
The photo op.
Is there a photographer you want to?
This is Angela's first time, I think, doing bike resolution. There's a whole.
She doesn't know
ritual.
The protocol here
There's
yet.
A whole ritual that we do.
Great. Now you get to speak.
Thank you so much, all of you, for your approval of this resolution. It is Bike Month, as it has been every May for many years. And just as a reminder, Bike Month is celebrated in San Luis Obispo County and nationally as a way to promote human-powered vehicle transportation and, again, to encourage people of all ages and abilities to ride bicycles instead of driving. Jim Patterson and Bruce Gibson are aware, on May 23rd, there's the Executive Bike Challenge, and I understand from my predecessors that you both have a little competition going on that day. So as Councilmember Gibson has already given me his form, and hopefully all of you have it too, this is an opportunity to show your support for Bike Month and commit to, on the 23rd, biking your way to work or joining in the group rides, which will end up here just outside on the courtyard across the street for a breakfast. And we have APCD's Percy the Penguin and Mr. Eco himself, who is becoming quite the local ecological star, who will be at the breakfast as well. So I encourage all of you to sign this and bike your way to work that day and just show your support for all of this. In addition, we have over 60 other events, confidence workshops, the Tweed Ride, Kittical Mass, Bike to Bites tomorrow, actually in Atascadero. That's a new event. What else do we have? We have a couple bike happies. They're all throughout the county. And again, it's just to promote people not to get in spandex and try and ride hundreds of miles in a day, but rather to just try out your bike again and realize that it's another way to get around from A to B. So thank you so much for all of your support. And look to our website, rideshare.org/BikeMonth2012 for a list of all the other events in the community. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And this year we have a special feature. This is the sixth year that I've ridden in from Santa Margarita, and every year, and hopefully this year as well, we've had riders ride up to meet us in Santa Margarita and ride down with us. And this year, CAO Jim Grant has committed to riding his tandem bike up, and he's going to pedal uphill, and I'm going to pedal downhill.
So, wow, nice.
We're going to ride together. But Supervisor Gibson.
That's why we elected you chair, Mr. Patterson. You're the smart one. And on that same day, we'll be bringing a ride in from Morro Bay, which is always a lot of fun. It's flat and it's cool, so you know that's
with a tailwind.
With a tailwind, so it's all good. Anyway, we'll try to get a ride. That's not next week. That's the week after next. Next week we'll try to do a ride to work, and we'll get ready. Sounds like a good time.
Okay, good deal. The next presentation is from General Rogelio Flores of the Mexican Consulate. And Supervisor Teixeira will lead that presentation.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson. At this time, I'd like to call Senor Flores to the podium for a presentation that they wish to make to the board.
Thank you very much. Honorable members of the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, good morning. First of all, I would like to say how thankful I am to great honor of allowing me to speak with you in this place where important decisions regarding our community are made. The reason for my presence here and today is because on behalf of the people and government of Mexico, of the Consulate of Mexico and myself, I want to extend to you my gratitude to the gesture of affection and respect towards my country and towards our patriotic symbols by having the Mexican flag and a replica of the Bell of the Independence both permanently displayed at the entrance of the chambers, which allows visitors not only to admire them but to serve as a reminder of both of friendships between both nations. To show our appreciation, I would like to ask for your permission, if it is no inconvenience for you, to offer you this plaque that expresses this gratitude, taking into consideration the celebration of the 150th anniversary of the Battle of Puebla, known as Cinco de Mayo. Thank you very much for your helpful, for your support to the Mexican community, and I'm very glad to stay here this morning.
Picture too. Can we get a picture? Yeah, would you come up here with us? One second here. Again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is my pleasure, sort of, to recognize Under Sheriff Basti. I qualify it only slightly because his retirement marks the passage of one of the great public servants of this county, and he will be missed.
Thank you. But
I've also checked. They give us the summary to read, but sometimes their actual resolution has some good stuff in it. But this time, discretion prevailed at the Sheriff's Department, apparently, and none of the really juicy stuff has been provided for
me to
read. This is a resolution recognizing Martin J. Basti for his 32 years of service to the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office. Whereas Martin Basti first began service to the citizens of the County of San Luis Obispo December 1979 as a sheriff's dispatcher clerk. And whereas on November 23, 1981, Martin was promoted to deputy sheriff, assigned to the Coast Station. And whereas on August 11, 1985, Martin was assigned as a deputy sheriff to the Detective Bureau. And on April 17, 1989, promoted to sheriff's senior deputy, assigned to detectives. And on January 21st, 1990, promoted to sergeant, assigned to patrol. And on March 21st, 1993, promoted to sheriff's lieutenant, assigned to patrol. And whereas on July 4th, 2004, Martin was promoted to sheriff's commander, assigned to South Patrol Station. And on August 20th, 2007, promoted to sheriff's chief deputy, assigned to field operations. And on January 9th, 2011, Martin was promoted to undersheriff under the newly elected Sheriff Ian Parkinson. And whereas, over the past 32 years, Martin has continued to be part of numerous community volunteer organizations. He has generously offered his knowledge, skills, and capabilities without hesitation. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize Martin J. Basti for 32 years of outstanding public service to the residents of our county.
You want the sheriff to speak first, maybe.
You get last.
You get rebuttal. You get rebuttal.
I don't think he wants me to speak. I'll just want to add that over the last year, just over a year, Marty's been with me as a partner and as a friend, and much of what we've accomplished over the last year, I believe he deserves credit for. So I do miss him. I will get to see him. I'm not sure I recognize him with this on his face, but I'm sure we'll spend a lot of time together. I thank you for all your time, Marty.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, Marty, if you would, We have several members of the board that would like to comment, and then we'll give you an opportunity after the fact. If you want to repute anything that's said up
there. Be happy to yield to the board. Thank you.
That's just the way it works here, Mr.
We'll start with Supervisor Gibson.
Well, it's been my pleasure to know Marty for as long as I've been involved in public issues in this county. I first met him when I was chair of the Cayuga Citizens Advisory Council. And shortly after he was promoted to lieutenant, I do believe on his own initiative, he started coming out to advisory council meetings, which was not the norm at that point. It was, I guess, more typical. If there was a problem, somebody might show up. But Marty started attending virtually every one of the monthly meetings of the Citizens Advisory Council. And I can't tell you what a remarkable event that turned out to be in terms of forming the bond between him personally, his agency, and the community and individuals of the community of Los Osos. And I will just give you one example that I think is sort of the legacy of Marty Basti, and that had to do with the July 4th celebration in Cayucas, which 6 or 7 years ago was a fairly disorderly event in downtown in terms of public behavior, of public drunkenness and other misbehaviors, and the community got rather sick of it. And I think Marty had probably moved on to South Station at that point, but it was through the kind of bond, and I know he was involved from afar, but through the kind of bond that he developed between the Sheriff's Department and the community of Cayucas, we brought back the law enforcement agencies and
on that level, too. I think it has been critical, and I know that you've been incredibly responsive to the community, to the board's needs, and so I thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Meacham.
Marty, congratulations, and the short time that I have known you, I've greatly appreciated the assistance you've given our office, as well as attending the advisory council meetings as well. And just the kind of guy that you know he is, when they did the badge, the pinning for our new undersheriff, the new undersheriff mentioned that Marty would give you the shirt off his back, and he literally did. His jacket had not come in yet. Marty gave him his to wear, the kind of guy he is. Thank you, and best of luck to you. You might stick around for the next resolution, though. It's the older Americans.
Sheriff will appreciate that comment. Thank you.
Well, we heard... Still young on this side, an older American, we'll see. Supervisor Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson. Met Marty about 10 years ago when I was Parks Commissioner, and he came to a meeting because we're having some problems with the Parque Los Osos and the skate park out there. Solved the problem, took care of it, then moved on to South County, where for many years he was the eyes and ears and the go-to guy in South County. Any question you had about the Sheriff's Department or anything that was going on, Marty Basti was your guy. We're going to miss you terribly. You did a hell of a job, excuse my language, but people in the South County are very grateful to you for what you've done, especially the community of Oceano. The thing that you've done for the kids in the community down there are exemplary, and you do make a hell of a pancake, too. Thank you.
Well, I'll just back clean up here. Marty, you've had a long and storied career at the Sheriff's Department and certainly left a legacy. I think what I've observed, and I concur with Supervisor Hill, the transition with Sheriff Parkinson into the department, I think the success of that is in part due to your involvement. And I really appreciate the fact that the Sheriff saw the wisdom appointing you under sheriff and working with you. I know one of the commitments the sheriff made was to reach out to all the community organizations. He came to my advisory councils. You were always there with him, taking notes and listening to what the people had to say, and it translated to results. And these retirements are always a bittersweet moment. We hate to see you go. Appreciate all that you've done for the county over the years, and wish you the best, you and your wife, in your retirement. So thank you very much, Marty.
Thank you. My turn?
Your turn.
Well, first of all, nobody does this alone, and I really do have to extend my appreciation to my wife of 30 years, who's very happy that there's no more graveyards and no more middle-of-the-night calls, et cetera. Secondly, to Sheriff Parkinson, certainly we do have the momentum and moving forward the department, and what an opportunity he gave me, not only to help him, but to continue to help the community. And Bruce, I was going to do the full Bruce distinguished look, but I didn't want to upstage you at one of the meetings or something.
You got time.
And I do have some time now where I can go out and do some stuff for the community through Kiwanis and the Special Olympics coming up this week. So, and there was a time when I had to work and then go do those things, and now I don't have to. Lastly, I want to express the appreciation for the men and women of the Sheriff's Office. For the last three decades, being there, working with them, we have kept this community safe. It's a great place to live, and it's still that way. You need to be proud of the Sheriff's Office, and I know that my efforts, my contribution will not be forgotten, and a lot of the things I put in place will continue, but that's what we need to do is work as a community and work together. But again, thank all of those, and thank everybody here today. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Supervisor Meacham, you're up.
Well, I get to read the resolution proclaiming the Older Americans Month, I guess because I'm the older American on the board. And I hear folks often come up and say I'm a certain amount of time resident of San Luis County. Well, I'm going on 65 years in San Luis County and nine generations of Californians. My Spanish and Mexican heritage goes back nine generations. So we've been around a while. So whereas there are over 58,000 citizens aged 60 and older in San Luis Obispo County, and this population has increased by 29% in the last 10 years, and the Adult Services Policy Council is committed to helping all individuals maintain their health and independence in later life and recognizes that our older residents generously volunteer in our community with the Good Neighbor and Caring Callers programs, RSVP, Senior Nutrition, food banks, and many other venues. And whereas the fruits of knowledge and experience can be affected.
Thank you very much. My name is Kathleen Carley. I'm a division manager in public health, but I'm the co-chair of the Adult Services Policy Council, so we thank you for this proclamation. As we said in the proclamation, the theme this year is it's never too old to play, and we do encourage the residents in our county to look to their older neighbors in the community and invite them out for a picnic or play a board game or just have a friendly chat. We live in a relatively affluent county, and we're fortunate that only about 6% of our older adults live below the poverty line. But the current economic challenges have resulted in budget cuts and have created hardships for those older citizens who do struggle financially and who need assistance to remain safe and independent in their homes. At the same time, we recognize what a caring and generous group our older adults are. They donate money to local causes, and they volunteer in great numbers. For example, in 2011, senior volunteers at RSVP served over 154,000 hours in San Luis Obispo County. This equates to more than $3.6 million, which is based on $23.42 an hour, which is the stated value of a volunteer hour in our area, according to the Independent Sector's Value of Volunteer Time California report. At the San Luis Obispo Senior Symposium, which occurred in October 2011, which many of the board attended, we learned that according to the California Department of Aging, San Luis Obispo will experience a 200 to 299% increase in our elderly population over the age of 85, which is much greater than urban centers like Los Angeles, San Diego, or the Bay Area. Participants agreed at the symposium that addressing issues of aging will require collaboration and innovative partnerships among the nonprofit, business, government, and community sectors. We thank the board for your past support and look for your leadership as we address these challenges in the coming years. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Carla. And to conclude our presentation calendar this morning, we have Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a resolution proclaiming National Foster Care Month, and I wonder if the whoever it is that's come is here. Is there someone here on behalf of the foster care program? You see people moving. And not moving forward. So we'll just read it anyway, and we'll make sure somebody gets it. Because it is an important issue. The County of San Luis Obispo recognizes the importance of providing children safe, healthy, and loving homes in which to stay when they are unable to stay with their families. 321 children in San Luis Obispo County are currently in foster care. To help these children have safe, healthy, nurturing places to stay and to support the families that provide these homes, the San Luis Obispo County Department of Social Services is acknowledging National Foster Care Month to raise awareness for the need for foster homes for local children and join other organizations to celebrate the foster homes in our community. And this effort, along with similar celebrations in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, will offer children the chance to live with safe, healthy families when they cannot live with their own families, and encourage other dedicated individuals to make a powerful difference in the lives of children through foster care. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim May as National Foster Care Month in San Luis Obispo County, and in so doing, urge all citizens to join in a national effort to raise awareness about the importance of foster care and the need for foster homes. And do we have, I see someone from our library.
And I can see that they get that. I'm Margaret Estra, Assistant Library Director, and have with me one of the things we are supporting. This is our second year that we've supported this program throughout our 15 branch locations. We have bags, okay? We use them for book bags, but they're, as my staff said, fabulous. You can put groceries in here. And we really do service our youth in our community, and this is certainly an underserved group that we're very aware of. We love these kids, and we're glad to have any opportunity to assist in the foster care programs in San Luis Obispo County.
So, Margaret, where can they get these bags then?
Any branch when the branch is open. Again, we want them in our family's hands so that they're carrying them out so people see it. It's just a great service that we promote, and certainly all year long, but in May we take the time to really get them in our branches. They're there. They're available. They're being handed out. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret.
All these bags are going to close all the supermarkets.
That wraps up our our presentation calendar this morning, so we will dive right into general public comment.
They can also find out a lot of information on our website, and I'm happy to report that it's very easy to remember. It's slovote.com, no longer the long county blah, 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 blah. But we like to say it's slovote, not slow vote. It's slovote because we will obviously not be slow in our vote reporting when it comes to election night. So hopefully everybody will get registered, and if they have any questions, they can contact our office, 781-5228. Thank you.
Or go to the website, slovote. And what was it, .com? .org. .com. Okay. Thank you. Sheriff Parkinson, followed by Suzanne Idaye.
Good morning, Ian Parkinson, County Sheriff, along with Chief Deputy Rob Reed. In addition to the county's annual report, I decided to bring back the sheriff's annual report. I brought along some copies dating back to 1967, where you can see our old sheriff's badge with the traditional bear, the 70s, the 80s with their own artwork, the 90s under Sheriff Ed Williams, and now 2012 with ours. Maybe you could hold one of your copies up and show our artwork. The value of the annual report for us is to outline to the public what is happening over the past year with the Sheriff's Office. Traditionally, that report should be due in February.
The copies that you have are collector's items because I only had 10 hard copies made. The report is now available online at slowsheriffs.org, so anybody from the public is invited and encouraged to go view it. All departments are listed, including all volunteer within our office, and relevant information over the past year. In the future, you'll see that report in February. It's delayed this year. If you look on the very back page, one of the last pages of the report, you'll see a great picture, and that is of our former PIO, Rob Bren. Rob was actually given the task of coordinating this project at the beginning, and unfortunately, as you're aware, he passed away. So we had to kind of pick up the pieces and finish. And I just want to recognize two people in addition to Rob, Brandy Swain, who worked with Rob in Crime Prevention Unit, and also Commander Aaron Nix, that spent a lot of time and effort putting that together. You also noted that you'll note the number of pages. The last report that I have in my hands from 91 has 16 pages, and every other page is pictures. And if you look at the number of pages there, it's a pretty extensive report, and hopefully it'll just grow in the future to not only illustrate what's going on, but each contribution to the sheriff's office. So thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff. And where may people find this online again?
www.slowsheriffs.org.
Very good.
It's right on the front. You'll see annual report icon, and click on it, and
there you go.
Viewing it.
Yeah, excellent report. Thank you, Supervisor
Meacham.
You autograph
these a little later.
Pardon me?
Are you autographing these?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Then we can put them on eBay because they're collector's items.
I'll be watching eBay.
Thank you, Sheriff Parkinson. We appreciate getting that information. Suzanne Idaye, followed by David Weissman.
Good morning. I'm very excited to announce that the county has been awarded $1 million in state funds for its first-time homebuyer program. And now the county is in a position to help 25 low-income homebuyers. And we're hoping to receive these $1 funds, in September. And for more information, you can call 781-4974 or go to our website at www.sloplanning.org. Thank you.
Thank you, Sudan. That's good news. So 781-4974.
Yes. 781-4974.
Or
at our website, which is www.sloplanning.org.
Very good. Okay, thank you. David Weissman, followed by Ben DeFada.
Good morning, Supervisors. David Weissman here speaking to you today on behalf of the Station Host Association of California. As a volunteer at the Amtrak station, I only get to... you might call it embarrassing. We'll do this once a year, and the public will get to see it. My secret shame. There we go. Because this coming Saturday, May 12th, here in Things for the Kids, there'll be railroad hats and coloring books and model trains and paper folding trains for the children to come of all ages to the celebration. Again, that's noon to 4 on Saturday at the Amtrak station. That's at the end of Santa Rosa Street. Parking is free. Admission is free. In fact, people should know, if you take an Amtrak trip from San Luis, you go to San Francisco, you go down to Los Angeles, parking is always free. Long-term parking is free with your ticket for the duration of your stay. We heard mention of Bike Month. You can merge the bikes and the trains. You can take your bike on the train. You can get off the train in Santa Barbara or another location and have your bike with you there. We'll have information about all this kinds of stuff at the station, what are the requirements for taking a bike, for shipping a bike, and that type of stuff. Remember, too, that with the gas prices going up as they are and likely to go higher this summer, Amtrak is a good alternative for families. People realize when they fly, you pay a full price for all your children. But if you travel with Amtrak, children 2 through 15 are half price. And that makes a big difference to a family of 3 or 4 or 5 that may be heading down to Disneyland or Legoland in Southern California. So you'll be able to learn all about this, the schedules, the fares, what's available, by coming down to our Amtrak station Saturday. Again, that's noon to 4 for National Train Day. And, again, to close, we'll humiliate just a little bit more. So you'll be, this is what you do. You have to say, all aboard, and there you go. I did it. And so we hope to see you all this coming Saturday at the Amtrak station. Thanks very, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Weissman. We only wish that train day there were more of them each year so you could come and do your little presentation. We appreciate it. Thank you. Ben DeFatta, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Morning, Chairman Patterson and boards, sheriff, public. Ben DeFatta reporting on another chapter of As the Toilet Flushes. First, I want to declare I'm not here for my health, attention, or fame. If I wanted attention, I would run for office. I'm here to try to prevent a travesty of justice by this board towards the people of Los Osos. Since the days when Senator Blakeslee's AB 2701 legislation came into effect, the residences of Los Osos had no representation. AB 2701 saw to that. This legislation allowed the county to build a sewer plant and prevented the Los Osos CSD from interfering with the design and building of this project. Our District 2 supervisor, who was supposed to represent the people of the district as well as Los Osos, took it upon himself to be the judge and jury of deciding the sewer project. It was promised that a fair bidding process of all systems was going to happen, but there were lies told to us when what was meant was the bidding was going to be only between the gravity collection systems instead of all systems. When the county took it over, the first thing Gibson did was to hire Pavel Ogren as county public works director, and he also took it upon himself to make sure it was going to be a gravity system that he, years ago, started. Well, to make a long story short, we are now in the same boat we were in 1998 and 2005, with the main players again making sure that what was going to be built was the same old antiquated, expensive, gravity, stinking sewer project. The same players are again trying to put a square peg into a round hole, and you other four supervisors are helping them get along doing it. You know who you are, guilty by association. These two have an ulterior motive, and it doesn't take a genius to figure out what it is. This little village of Los Osos was built in a unique place where the prohibition portion of the town sits on a sand dune, which makes it vulnerable to seismic liquefaction activity with three faults under it. Not a good place to dig 50 miles of deep trenches for big pipes that gravity collection needs to flow downhill. This Gibson-Algren gravity project will cost $200 million, and I'm sure much more by the time it gets done. It is unaffordable to the people of this little town, especially when we can build a plant that's better and $50 to $100 million cheaper. Mr. Gibson refuses to have an affordability study of only those that reside in the prohibition zone. And even knowing how many lives of those that live in Los Osos will be devastated, he still wants to continue on, and you people go along with it. How can you other four get along with his cockamamie scheme to throw out of Los Osos at least 6,000 to 7,000 people, let alone the businesses that have or will fail due to the economy, and also those businesses that will fail in Los Osos and, for that matter, the whole county?
Thank you, Mr. DeFatta.
Thank you for your extra time.
Gwen Taylor, followed by Yuri Freiberg. Okay, please hold the applause. Ms. Taylor?
My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. I'm in report. The water table elevations are single sign facilities different from the 1999 and 2003 data used in the study. Contractors are going to be responsible in selecting the dewatering methods and maintaining the dewatering systems, which will include pumps. In some areas, dewatering will be down as deep as 24 feet, where dewatering is required to be 2 feet below the bottom of the trench to allow for the pipeline construction. The volume of water to be pumped in the area of retention is of grave concern on the old Tri-W site. The potential of the daylighting of this water is of grave concern to many, and a mobile home park that is near the Sweet Springs Preserve is one. Is this area to be the high groundwater installation part of the daylighting, or is the county concerned about other persons in the area? Tri-W site is almost assured without recharging our increase of our aquifer. Tri-W is not the site to place water that has come out of trenches. It is potentially contaminated. It has a problem with other constituents, and this is not a site that is going to recharge our groundwater basin, which we need desperately.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Gary Freiberg, followed by Dr. C. Height.
Good morning. I'm Gary Freiberg. I've been a resident of Los Osos Baywood Park for 25 years, and I want to set the stage, and please understand that my time here is meant, you know, I fully respect you guys, and so please don't hear me through lens where I'm attacking, because I'm not. It's really a sincere effort on my part, because the infrastructure part is in Los Osos, but the economic part spreads its consequences throughout San Luis Obispo County. And Supervisor Gibson, accepting your figure of $165 a month for the assessment, and again, I'm agreeing with you, sir. If we take $165 a month times 12, that's $1,980, and the county has forecast that about $10 million is going to be redirected from spending, discretionary consumer spending, to have to pay the sewer bill. So we come out with $1,980 a year times approximately the 5,000 residents, and that's where the $10 million figure comes from, the redirected spending. But we have to also consider, and sir, just to include, is that we have the $165 a month to pay the tax assessments for the $189 million loan. But on top of that, we have a new utility, just like a water bill, a gas bill, electric bill. We're going to have a sewer bill. So that's going to be, say, $50 to $60 a month. And let's say, for ease of conversation, it's $55 a month. And then we also have to, we can't ignore the wiggle room, because, as you know, Pablo Ogra now has the ability to write a $150,000 check without getting your approval. And so we don't know how many of those checks for cost overruns, for changes, are going to take place. But we have to figure something for that. So if we said $40, $50 a month, somewhere around there, and we split that and say that that's $45 a month for the wiggle room, for the cost overruns that we're not expecting, then that comes up to $265 a month now. And then what happens is that $265 a month times 12 to get it down, again, the annual figure times the 5,000 residents, now we're looking at $15,900,000. So it's almost $16 million a year taken out of spending that is going to be for the next 30 to 40 years. Real quickly, because I see my time going away, if we say take that $16 million and divide it by $50, discretionary spending to go out to dinner, to go shopping, to do those sorts of things, that's 320,000 $50 transactions. That's 27,000 $50 transactions. It's almost 1,000 transactions of $50 a day, and it's going to impact jobs, job creation, job stability, revenues for the senior programs, for schools, and I think that the real true spending needs to be considered in addition to the $165 tax assessment.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much for listening to
me,
and please consider. Thank you very much.
You need those for the record? Madam Clerk needs those for the record, Mr. Freiberg.
About what I supposedly think of the county, social services, even HUD. And I read these reports after I picked up the application for the county position to end homelessness. I thought I had the talent, the objectivity, leadership, and experience you needed to find solutions, not just network and maintain the status quo, but practical solutions. I believe I am representative of the senior disabled fixed income population of Los Osos, known to you statistically from government census. So let me be the example. I truly believe what happens to me, what has happened and is happening to me, is representative of what will happen to Los Osos as they fight to retain their dignity, their homes, and the integrity of their community. An integral part of the Los Osos community is the diverse, something I feel most comfortable with. We are also known as a protected class of citizens, as identified by the UNRU Civil Rights Act. I believe that the issue Los Osos brings to this board are covered, if not protected, by fair housing, fair employment, equal opportunity. Last week, I asked if I had done enough. Has my family done enough to earn my basic rights of citizenship, free speech? Apparently not. Witness also states the complainant speaks at public meetings that is broadcast on local television and is often seen on these televised meetings to be reading from small print. Can any of you tell that I'm reading a size 20 to 22 font? I am only one of many have spoken up for this community. I had a life when I ask you to not give the money to the same people who did nothing all these years to end homelessness. You must be sincere. You almost lost your HUD grant. So I've got to ask, how is the new position in social services going to help the impending displacement of Los Osos' protected class if they do not qualify for welfare? How is it going to prevent the homeless of a community that is stereotyped and defamed? And how will Los Osos fare with providers who attribute homelessness to drug and alcohol abuse, mental illness, lifestyle, and others? We're talking about hundreds, maybe thousands, of preventable others. Consider this, hundreds, maybe thousands of preventable others who could lose their home. When I speak up for our worth, it is not personal. It is business. It is a responsibility, and what just happened here before I spoke was inappropriate. It's public comment, not public debasement.
Thank you, Dr. Hyde. Julie Tacker, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning, gentlemen. I am Julie Tacker. I also live in Los Osos, and I'm a little tired of the disrespect. I think Mr. Freiberg raises some very valid points, and what I would request is that an economic impact study be done that includes the ripple effect of the project's effects in Los Osos throughout the county. In addition to this request, I would ask that the county do a financial plan to address the 30 to 40% of Los Osans who are low income. We have older Americans that live in Los Osos, and they are on fixed incomes. Ms. Taylor's comments, speaking to the dewatering of the trenches, this is very concerning and new information. This and the recycled water management plan that the RAC continues to be not allowed to investigate or study was brought to the Regional Water Quality Control Board last Thursday by the citizens of Los Osos, the very dedicated citizens of Los Osos, and it was requested and approved that two members of their board will investigate the dewatering plan and the recycled water management plan. I request that your board do the same. These are serious issues for seawater relative to seawater intrusion in our basin. Seawater intrusion, gentlemen, is irreversible, and it is expensive to mitigate. Speaking of, I would also request that you expedite water conservation in Los Osos. You do not have to wait to implement a water conservation plan or water conservation education. Why are we waiting? You had 1 year from the due diligence period that That date expired March 15th of this year, to be educating Los Osans. With every 5-gallon flush, we are wasting 3 2/3 gallons of water. With every gallon
for 6 hours for public comment was the return of a nitrate study. It's a statewide study that's looking at the nitrate pollutants all over the state of California. And most of these pollutants, I think they said 95-96% are coming from farmland, ag fertilizers, and pesticides. What was telltale was that many of these pollutants have been existing, fertilizers and pesticides were more affordable, quite affordable, they were dumped on farmland to the degree that much of the pollutants that are down in our groundwater now are from prior mismanagement of some of the fertilizers. So what were, you know, that was just an interesting part that came up. In Los Osos, I'm very ashamed of this, Mr. Gibson and Mr. Ogren, their failure to run a $14,000 nitrate study in Los Osos. The prior project had nitrate studies being done every 6 months. As soon as the county took it over, they stopped those nitrate studies, and we have not had the testing done at the nitrate well test wells. For gosh sakes, why do you need to wait any longer? You've had the public requesting for a year plus. The point is nitrates are going down in Los Osos. As water conservation drops less liquid into the soil, our nitrate levels are leveling off and actually going downhill. The reason for building a sewer is a non-existent reason anymore. 1 milligram over drinking level in our drinking supply is not a reason to build a $200 million plan that will do nothing, nothing to address saltwater intrusion. Mr. Gibson has magic water coming in 3 years to build out, to add $28 million to our cost. It's not going to happen. There is no water, and it's just getting worse. You sit here and build a $200 million flawed project that is never going to get built because now it has no place to put the water. It's going to lose a 3-year supply of our drinking supply with just this dewatering plan, which you've heard a little bit about. Don't be unresponsive, please. You're looking at a big, messy nightmare that's going to affect our entire county. It's your chance to call this project to a halt, reevaluate, get somebody from the outside, take Mr. Ogren off of this. Thank you.
Linda, you dropped something right there, by the way.
Thank you. Susan Warren, followed by Hank Hohenstein.
Good morning, Chairman Patterson and supervisors. I wanted to speak about a community education opportunity that's coming up next week, and it's about integrating behavioral health into primary care. And I think you've all received the information on this. It's open to the public. And on Monday night, it will be here in the supervisors' chambers. And we have Dr. Thomas Fries and Beth Rakowski that are coming from UCLA Integrated Services and the Pacific Southwest Addiction Training Center. He's been training around the world. Right now, Thursday, he's going to be up in Sacramento for a capital briefing talking about implementing the health reform and achieving parity in substance use disorders. And he's with a number of other speakers that are really addressing this issue. This is not necessarily part of the healthcare reform because of the research that's been done over the last 10 years through PET scans, et cetera, that's really looking at and has proven that mental health and substance use disorders, in fact, any addictions, are brain problems. They're brain diseases. It's because our brains function differently. And Dr. Volkow, who's the head of NIDA, which is the research organization, was on Dateline April 30th, and I understand you may be able to go back and check that. And she showed the PET scans, how this is working, and what a dramatic change this is going to be in healthcare services now that we are integrating the behavioral health right into primary care. And this is going to be a dramatic change and a long-needed change for providing services. This will be all day in Atascadero. We will have a training from 9 to 4 at the Lake Pavilion, and anyone's invited. We've kept it free because we want as many of the community members or anybody to come. There will also be CEUs for therapists and registered nurses. That evening, we will be having, from 6:30 to 8, a presentation for the physicians at the Atascadero Lake Park. Monday night, it will be the main agenda item here for the Health Commission.
Most perceive government as part of the problem. We are worried about federally run health care. We are worried about overzealous regulation. We are worried about gas prices and the mandate to regulate air pollution. We are worried about taxes, and taxes again appear on our ballot. Do you all get the message? You have the ability to make it easier for us to reduce fuel costs and put fewer emissions into our airshed, and you have not done it. What a shame. You have 900-plus vehicles, plus or minus vehicles, in the county fleet. If you had taken the lead, what opportunities would we have had? But no, your preference is to jam people into housing along transportation corridors at 30 dwelling units per acre. In addition to your fleet, how many cars, light pickup trucks, are owned by all the government entities in your county? Federal, state, Caltrans, Cal Poly, counties, cities, school districts, special districts. The agencies are not difficult to count. Now how many cars and light pickup trucks do you have? Suppose the majority of these vehicles ran on CNG. How many private fleet owners and private vehicle owners would then avail themselves of alternative fuels? Until last month, there was only one refueling station in all of San Luis Obispo County. And guess what? It had the highest price for CNG in the state of California. Wow, economics works. This conversation is not just simply to harangue, but to offer a tried proposition. This proposal works. In a region not much larger than our county, they made the decision to go CNG. The municipal bus company converted all its rolling stock to CNG, and it became the first bus company in America to be powered totally by alternative fuel. Fortunately, I was an active participant on that team. We created the plan, ordered the buses, installed fueling stations, trained mechanics, and in the process created a whole new curriculum at our community college. We equipped a defunct auto dealership to service CNG vehicles, public and private. The community has many, many cleaner operating vehicles, cleaner air, and lower operating costs. All of those are the goals of this body. All want lower operating costs. All want cleaner air. But what can we anticipate here in San Luis Obispo County? As directed by a distant governing body, without directly elected members, we are being offered cramped Soviet-style housing on a bike route.
Thank you, Mr. Hohenstein.
You're welcome.
Chuck Sasenya, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning, Chair Patterson and fellow supervisors. My name is Chuck Sasenya, longtime resident of Los Osos, past member of the CSD Board of Directors and a member of Los Osos Sustainability Group. Back in 1980, the state Supreme Court told the city of Petaluma that they could not pass a no-growth ordinance just to keep people from moving to their community. But they did say that you had the authority to link growth to resource limitations, typically water. You're not the first government agency to refuse to use that authority. I think probably Cambria is maybe the only one that has, and that's by default. But I'm interested in Los Osos. We have a chance to live within our means with our water basin. It's a finite water basin. There aren't a lot of community arguments about it. We don't have multiple cities arguing over that water. But that leaves it up to the county to protect that water basin. Unfortunately, sustainability was never a concept in your vision. Mr. Gibson would rather blame the water purveyors for meeting the needs of the development that the county allowed.
and yet you fight to keep the RAC, Water Resource Advisory Committee, the county's established committee for looking at these issues, from reviewing the Los Osos Wastewater Project Water Reuse Plan. You say that it was looked at by five other governmental entities, including the TAC. How can you say that with a straight face? Tonini spray fields were the plan when the TAC was looking at this. Your current plan isn't much better. You're taking the water outside of our basin. You didn't let anybody look at your dewatering plan until the last minute when you had to put something out there. You've had the groundwater elevations and pipe depths for years. You've known how much water would be involved, that it would be hundreds of thousands of gallons of water a day taken out of our water supply just to dewater to build your gravity collection system. It's all a pattern of non-disclosure until the last minute when you have to face the music. We've already lost the lower basin, or we're losing it to saltwater intrusion, and now you want to take all that dewatering water out of the upper basin. At the same time, you want to shut off 5,000 dispersed leach fields and try and replace that with a centralized leach field at Broderson.
The option of the past program, which expires July 1st, there is a House and Senate Conference Committee trying to iron out the difference between the houses. Their first meeting is actually happening today, but I know there will be more. And it just so happens that the chair of the Senate side is our California Senator Barbara Boxer, so we can address the chair directly as constituents and have a voice in this. As you know, I see flaws on the Senate bill that has been in the past and huge, huge catastrophic problems with the House bill. And particularly, I know we just honored Bike Month, the overzealous removal of opportunities for non-motorized transportation. It's downright nihilistic to call something like safe routes to school a frill, as if the lives of children are just some kind of fluff that we don't have to care about as long as we have the big important problem projects laying more pavement and drilling more wells. I'm just amazed that somehow we're expected to believe that if you're drilling an oil well or laying pavement, that's a job, that's the economy. But if you're building a bike trail or if you're driving a transit bus, somehow that isn't. I just don't understand that logic. But in any event, we need to have an item here to develop our program for communicating with Barbara Boxer and the others. What is our bottom line? What are we willing to give up? I would say if there's a bone that we should throw the House in terms of things they want to throw out, let them throw out the high-speed rail. I support rail, but high-speed, if you count, high-speed means high energy. That means high cost. That means, in addition to the immense construction cost, the ticket cost is very high, whether it's paid by the traveler, making it unaffordable for most, or subsidized by the taxpayer. The taxpayer is investing time in earning the money for those taxes. Just as the massive billion-dollar highway expansion on Interstate 405, just adding a couple of lanes, that's $1 billion. It's actually $2 billion with the cost of bond repayment. How many hours of taxpayer time are plowed into that thing, which may save a driver a couple of minutes eventually? We need to be honest about our commitment of time. But first thing first, the kids' lives. Let's make sure that that's in the transportation bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Richard Margetson, followed by Elaine Watson.
Richard Margetson, I'd like to follow up on Chuck Cicina's comments about the recycled water management plan and its review by the RAC. In April, I mean, there was a process that led up to April, but at the April meeting, the RAC members voted to bring it back at the May meeting for discussion. It came back at the May meeting, but before the agenda item, you know, went to the RAC members and presentation from Mr. Ogren, Mr. Wynn stated that he had talked to three supervisors and was told that the RAC really shouldn't be looking at this at this point, that it had already been reviewed, and that there were five opportunities in Los Osos for input, and that sending it to the RAC would be overkill. The three supervisors that he stated were contacted were Mr. Patterson, Mr. Hill, and Mr. Gibson. The five entities that he said had reviewed or had the opportunity to put input, have input on the plan, were LOCAC, the Los Osos Community Advisory Council, which I asked at four of their meetings for it to be put on an agenda and never came back on an agenda because the advisory council was controlled by Mr. Gibson. It's advisory to the supervisor. So obviously it's not going to be on there. The TAC was mentioned. Technical Advisory Committee was disbanded years ago. Years ago. They never looked at this plan, never had an opportunity to look at this plan. Not this plan that was sent to the Coastal Commission. The ISJ was another one stated. The ISJ convenes in secrecy. How would we have any input into what their thoughts were on this plan? The CSD, Los Osos CSD, got the plan late. It's been at their utilities committee, and at some point maybe there will be comments coming out of that. Then the last avenue was direct comment with the Coastal Commission. Well, it was discussed at the...
After realizing that despite repeated public comments, letters, engineering reports paid for by the sustainability group, that we were being systematically ignored. This is a well-researched document with valid conclusions that raise significant issues that, if not addressed, will need to be mitigated in the future at a much greater cost and to the detriment of the community as a whole. One of the signers of this is a lecturer at Cal Poly, has a master's degree in soil science, has worked with a local geotechnical engineering firm for 22 years, has helped design hundreds of on-site sewage disposal systems throughout the county, and has lived in Los Osos for 33 years. You just heard Chuck Cecenia, an environmental planner and intimately involved with the previous project. Another is a retired professional who is a consummate researcher. Do you believe that any one of these people that we would put our names on any document that wasn't as solid as absolutely possible? The emphatic answer is no. And yet you allow this to proceed with a steady stream of plan and contract approvals. Have each of you read the 100-plus pages of the recycle and dewatering plans? Do you even know what you're approving? Do you really want to continue with approvals when so much of this needs to be fixed? The recycle plan should have been reviewed by RAC, but it wasn't. Mr. Ogren worked very hard to keep it off the RAC agenda. Staff doesn't want eyes on it, and for a good reason. The dewatering plan is another can of worms and a case in point. You should know this stuff for yourselves. Do you want to start construction if a revocation can stop the project? Mr. Ogren tells you there's nothing to worry about, but Mr. Ogren isn't always right. Mr. Meacham, you questioned the contracts with the farmers at the last meeting. What if farmers refuse to take that water? Staff tells us that this is similar to the Salinas situation, but it isn't. Our farmers still have access to high-quality water, not the high-salt water available in Salinas. Staff tells you there will be more interest as time goes on. But why would there be? Are you really willing to risk... to force the reuse water on these farmers and risk the considerable backlash from the Farm Bureau? Maybe none of you will stand up and do the right thing, but maybe on the other hand, one of you will. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Watson. Marie Smith, followed by Michael Wynn.
My name is Marie Smith. I live in Los Osos. I'm here today because there appears to be a severe flaw in the project review process. While an applicant awaits a permit, which includes an environmental and scenic viewshed review, they can legally remove any plant life form, dead or alive, with a trunk less than 8 inches in diameter, no matter the actual size of habitat involved. This can drastically affect the outcome of the permit, of the project permit approval. An example of this recently happened in the Sweet Springs East, the new Audubon 8-acre addition to Sweet Springs. While Audubon awaits an environmental determination for a project where the county's preliminary assessment indicates, this is a quote, "There is a high likelihood that we will be requiring an environmental impact report for this application," end quote, an area was cleared near 3rd Street and Pismo Avenue. This was not only an active habitat near wetlands, but a scenic view shed, a natural barrier between a house, Poplar Road, and Sweet Springs. When we were clearing the large areas of veld grass near the upper open area, most people were okay with this, even though this area is also included in the review process. But because of the activity on May 3rd, we are concerned that this type of clearing could continue, leading to unnecessary destruction of nature, scenic view shed, and further erosion of a valid environmental determination. I am requesting that you investigate this problem and initiate a change in guidelines and laws so that for all projects, the ability to destroy nature and scenic view sheds while awaiting permit approvals does not happen again. I am also publicly requesting from Audubon that no more clearing, trimming be done in the east parcel until the project permit is approved. Instead of taking up more time today, I am sending you an email with a longer version of my thoughts, so you can relax and read it in front of your computer, of course, followed by immediate action. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Michael Nguyen, followed by Patrick Considine. Mr. Nguyen.
Good morning, Chairman Patterson, Supervisors. My name is Mike Nguyen, and I'm here only to respond to a number of allegations that have been made before you this morning. As you can see, a certain disruptive element.
Mr. Margenson, here you go again. Okay. You had your opportunity to speak, Mr. Margenson. Please, no shouting out, or I'll ask you to leave the chamber. The last request to speak is Patrick Considine from the Department of Social Services. Patrick?
Thank you. Good morning, Board of Supervisors. I am Patrick Considine, Supervisor with the Department of Social Services, and we'd like to take this moment on behalf of our entire department to thank you for your recognition of this May being the month for National Foster Care in the County of San Luis Obispo. We want to thank you further for the plaque that you presented this morning for our department as well. We are very proud of the work that our staff do at our Department of Social Services in serving the needs of our children and our families. It is unfortunate that in our county there are a number of children that are unable to remain in placement with their birth families. And so we look to appropriate care providers for these children. We are further proud of the fact that we lead the state of California in the percentage of children placed with other relative family members. And yet it remains that there is some number of children that have no relatives to go to, and we look to our licensed foster families for this very important work. We have today among us some representatives, and I wanted to take a moment just to recognize some of those community partners who do such a wonderful job in helping us in this community, which include here today the Probation Department, Jim Salio, Community Action Partners, Biz Steinberg. We also have foster family agencies such as Family Care Network and Aspira, the Kinship Center. We have today Cuesta Community College that is here as well. I want to take a moment and ask and put them on the spot if some of our people could stand up, and they do include staff from our department as well as the Kinship Center, some of the people I've mentioned. We have foster parents here today who do this wonderful work. We have one of our assistant directors, Natalie Walter. And could you guys please stand up for a minute so the board can see you and the good work that you do? I apologize for those community partners I may have left out, and I would like to conclude by just saying on a more serious note that it remains in our county, although we do a wonderful job in serving the families, we have a grave need at this time for more foster families. The need is great throughout our country, throughout our state, and certainly in our county. It's an incredible work and vocation that people do, and so we're asking, and we're not ashamed to ask today for all of you, including you, the board, to please consider thinking of people that may be interested in serving in this wonderful way, and don't hesitate to call 781-1705 if someone is interested in helping serve in this need. Again, we thank you for the plaque today. We appreciate your recognition. Thank you for your time this morning as well.
Thank you, Mr. Considine. It is... It certainly is a much needed and an important role to help our county family stay whole, and thank all of you for the work you do on the behalf of families in need in San Luis Obispo County. So remember 781-1705 if you're interested in getting involved and becoming a foster parent or a foster family. So thank you again. Okay, that concludes public comment this morning, and I know a number of you have been waiting patiently to move through the agenda. Oh, my colleagues are saying break, so we will take a 15-minute break and reconvene at 10:55. Please take your seats so we can reconvene the meeting. We've had a number of people here this morning waiting patiently for 2 hours to get to these next items. I'm going to skip the board committee reporting. We can do that next week. And move on to board business and ask Probation Chief Salio to give the staff report on the truancy ordinance.
Good morning, Jim Salio, Chief Probation Officer. I'm here for an update on the proposed truancy ordinance. We are requesting that the board withdraw from consideration the truancy ordinance that was presented previously. As you recall, this came from the Children's Services Network Council to review the ordinance and to see if there was any way we could refine the ordinance to target habitual truant youth. County Council's advice was they were unable to approve such an ordinance in that by narrowing the scope of the ordinance to deal with truancy, we would be encroaching into existing state law. We did have the meeting with the parents of the homeschool youth in March. We had quite a good turnout. There was over 50 parents and youth in attendance, and everybody that we knew of that wanted to be invited was invited. At the meeting, again, the concern was over the daytime curfew aspect of the ordinance. The parents were understanding in our need to address truancy in our community. However, they felt this ordinance was not the right mechanism to do so. After discussion, we decided not to pursue the ordinance and take an alternative route in such as modifying state law to allow truancy to be heard in the juvenile informal traffic court. This is a possible solution. It gets us to the same place we want it to be. We wanted to have a quick, immediate sanction for youth that are designated to be habitual truant by the school districts under the educational code, as opposed to the more lengthy route of filing the 601 petition and going through the juvenile delinquency court. And the parents were in support of this idea that we had proposed at our meeting. So we will be looking at exploring modifying the Welfare and Institution Code 256, which is the defines the juvenile informal traffic court and what offenses can be heard in that juvenile informal traffic court, and then also changing Ed Code 48262 to allow for habitual truants to be cited into the juvenile informal traffic court. We will be pursuing with our professional organizations. And also the parents of the homeschool youth did offer to help and assist in that effort. So at this time, we would like to recommend that the board withdraw from consideration adding the truancy prohibited ordinance to the San Luis Obispo County Code. And that concludes the presentation.
Very good. Thank you, Chief Salio. Any questions for my colleagues for Chief Salio? I see none. I'll open it to the public. I do have some requests to speak. We'll begin with Joshua Tharp, followed by Eric Greeney. Mr. Tharp.
Good morning, Board. My name is Joshua Tharp. I live in Arroyo Grande. I was present in both the January 17th hearing as well as the March 26th meeting that Jim Salio referred to. And I'd like to personally thank him and his group for seeing the flaws in this and being willing to go back to the drawing board. I know it's not easy to go back to the drawing board on something that you've invested that much time into. So I'd just like to take the opportunity to thank him for that.
Okay. And thank you for engaging in the process. We appreciate that effort. And hopefully we'll have a better outcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Eric Greening.
Thank you.
Followed by Mike Brown.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I would also like to thank you for your responsiveness to the concerns raised by the community. And I do think that the action to withdraw this is the right action at this time. The lesson here, obviously, is any time you are going to regulate a community, whether it's the business community, the agricultural community, or whatever, that community itself, which includes the homeschool community, the parents, and the youth, need to be at the table in the drawing up of the ordinance. You wouldn't be thinking about doing this some kind of regulation of business without having business people in on drawing it up. Yes, there are people who work with youth and their families who know a lot about them, but that's not the same thing as working directly with the affected population. And so I think a lesson here is anytime you're going to work with any affected population, including people who are not yet of voting age, they need to be included in the process from the beginning and not just put in a position of reacting to what looks like a finished product. I would also like to say that I am glad this means that young people can feel that they are occupying public space by right, that they are citizens, not suspects, that law enforcement, hopefully they will learn that law enforcement and experience that law enforcement is there to protect their rights and not challenge their right to exist in a public space. I also believe that if we're serious about supporting the schools, if they're so important that they are worthy of the time of non-school employees herding people into them, then we need to ask attentively for 3 hours. That's a population to be reckoned with. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mike Brown.
Mike Brown representing CoLab. We also are glad that the ordinance as proposed is being withdrawn, and it's been well covered what some of the issues were. But at the same time, truancy is a serious problem, and it's particularly as it spreads and grows and has been intractable for decades. Is a threat to democracy, because democracy is partially based on the idea that citizens will be able to read and write and reason and understand history and institutions and so forth. And if we have a continuing segment of the population that can't do that, it's a problem. And of course, there have been all sorts of approaches to this, and certainly the police approach doesn't necessarily work. I was part of an effort in a fairly large city in the 80s where they went to an incentive-based program and reasoned that, it ought to be like a job. So if you went every day and maintained a C average, you got paid $10 a month. If you made a B average, you got $20 a month. And if you made an A average, you made $30 a month. And then it came with a whole lot of summer employment programs. and the large corporations in the community, law firms and foundations, said if you graduate and you get into a college, be it a community college, all the way up to Yale or Harvard, we will see to it that you get the full tuition for your program, net of any scholarships or whatever. And that program didn't do a thing. The community still has horrible truancy, people dropping out, and whatever. So basically, you know, this is a threat and a problem that's much bigger than global warming and regulating the aromas from vineyards and so forth. And this is one where we really ought to throw some efforts at planning and get beyond the law enforcement and the education system and say, why is this market for public education eroding? Why don't they want to go? Why aren't the parents paying attention? And how could it be restructured in a systematic way that might make it work better? Is the traditional large industrial type high school and junior high a model adopted in the early 20th century actually reasonable and workable in our day and age? And that might be something some of these planners and others could work on.
Supervisor Meacham.
Is there any more public comment?
No more public comment. I'll close public comment.
Well, with that, I'm going to move approval of staff's recommendation, but I do want to make one quick comment. I kind of take a little issue with the suggestion that there was an assault on our youth. There was a good intention here, and there was a good intention by a number of great agencies that tried to come together to come to grips with this this problem that Mr. Brown has alluded to as a large problem, and it is. And there was no intent to assault in any way, shape, or form. But I appreciate those that were engaged in this, that came back to the table, and I think that there can be a better way to make this work. So I appreciate all the efforts in that, and with that, I'll move staff's recommendation.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Staff's recommendation. I, too, want to comment. Thank you, Supervisor Meacham, for your words on that. I do appreciate the effort. Let's remember that this started with our Children's Services Network trying to address a problem, and we had support from our schools and from our sheriff and our probation department, as well as many others, recognizing the problem. And I think this illustrates clearly that the process works. We had a hearing before this board, and people showed up and expressed their concerns, and we sent it back out, and it was reviewed. And the problem hasn't gone away, but we're taking a different approach now to resolving it. And I want to thank Dr. Crocker, who's here, Ian Parkinson, and Jim Salio for working so hard on this for so long, addressing the problem and continuing to address the problem. So it's not over yet. Thank you. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes. So, with that, thank you again, and we'll move on to our next hearing item. Would you introduce that, please, Madam Clerk?
That's item 27, a submittal of a Resolution 1 authorizing the issuance of lease revenue refunding bonds in order to fund 2002 certificate of participations to obtain a lower interest rate. 2, approving the form, terms, and provisions of the documents, clerks filed, associated with the refunding, conforming this section and appointment of bond counsel, fiscal advisor, and underwriter, and authorizing the chairman of the Board of Supervisors, auditor, controller, and other county officers and representatives to final and execute all documents, all districts.
Mr. Erb.
Okay. Thank you. My name is Jim Erb. I'm the assistant auditor, controller. Okay, we've got the slide up. I'm presenting today a refunding of our 2002 COP bonds that we think we've come up with a good thing here. The 2002 COP bonds were first issued to build this government building. They have a current balance of about $21.5 million. The interest rates on the bonds, they have different maturities, so the rates range between 4 and 5%. Right now, we're able to refund these bonds with lease revenue bonds, estimated to have a true interest cost around 3.1%. Okay, this refunding has also been approved by the Debt Advisory Committee. As part of refunding or issuing bonds, we go through a credit rating. And we recently had our credit rating from Fitch, who gave us a AA rating. This is the second highest rating that a county can get. We are in the top five counties in the United States for our credit rating. And some of the reasons that they rated us highly is our strong financial performance, our seven-year budget management plan. Dan Buckshy was with me on the rating call, and he presented how our plan has worked, how we've decreased our deficit over the last 4 years down to a workable amount at this point. Our pension reform was another big issue that they looked at. Our stable economy was another issue they took into account. We have lower than average unemployment compared to the state, and also we have about 23% government employment in San Luis Obispo County. That includes Atascadero State Hospital, CMC, Caltrans, Cal Poly, the county, cities, and that tends to lead to a more stable economy. Our tax base is good. We have a low concentration there. We don't have any one entity that's responsible for a big part of our property taxes. At one point, PG&E made up about 15%. And now they're down to about 6% of our property taxes. And we also have a low debt profile. Our debt percentage to total county expenditures is about 2.79%. Anything under 5% is considered good, and 5% is also what our debt policy calls for. So some of the advantages that we have to refunding right now is there's some historically low interest rates that we can take advantage of. We can recognize significant savings in our bond payments without extending the life of these bonds. We will actually have the same period that we had before. We're going to issue the bonds or go for pricing sometime towards the end of May. And if for some reason interest rates change after this resolution is approved, the auditor controller can still stop the issuing of bonds. So unless it's favorable for us, we won't issue them. And our expected cash flow savings is over $3 million with our present value savings close to 2.5. And it's our AA rating that helps us get this low interest rate. My last slide is our projection here, and this is the life of these bonds. And you can see the fourth column over is our actual cash savings, which is about $220,000 a year. And then the final column is the present value of that cash savings. So we're recommending that your board approve this resolution and we're able to issue these bonds.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Erb. Question,
yes,
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't think it should ever be understated, the bond rating is how important that is. It's almost like your credit rating at home. If you have a bad one, you're not going to get much from a loan standpoint. But, Jim, I have two parts of a question. One, what could we do as a county that would improve our bond rating even further? And what could we do as a board to assist with that improvement?
Well, I think we are doing a lot of it. What they're looking at is how we're managing our county finances in this economic downturn and how we're able to use money that is one-time money and not for events that are going to continue on in the future. So that was an important factor in rating our bonds. Pension reform is another one. They know that pension costs are out there and that they're big and they're hard to measure. And they see that we've been dealing with that with our labor groups. Also, our labor negotiations over the last 4 or 5 years, they see that the county labor employees have stepped up to the plate and are assisting in making our budget work. One thing that we have not had is furlough days. We haven't had layoffs of actual positions. Those are all important to the raters. They saw that we've been managing things well. So I think we need to continue with doing what we're doing and follow our seven-year plan that admin's laid out for us and pay attention to pension costs. And as we pay attention to the bonds that are out there, we look for opportunities to refinance and save some money.
If I could just add to that, the biggest thing that we could do to further enhance our bond rating is move out of the state of California. They made it very clear that achieving a AAA bond rating, which is the next step up, is impeded because we are located in California, because the state's bond rating is junk bond status, that there's just a fear out there of what the state could do to counties in general, and that's why they're I believe, are maybe only two or three counties that actually have a AAA. Mm-hmm. And just adding to what Mr. Erb noted, it's largely because of their cash position, low debt profile. And I think, we're, you know, nobody said this, but we're probably, you know, on the cusp between a AA and a AAA, but not quite there for AAA.
So that's all the reasons why we should be our own state?
State of mind.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Erb. Okay. That concludes questions at this point. I do have one request to speak, Mr. Brown.
Mike Brown representing CoLab, and we think this is a good move and attend the garden and do this kind of refinancing when it's a good deal. And I think Dan is absolutely right. Our problem is that the counties are administrative subdivisions of the state, and what the state does can have profound effects on the budget that the board would not have control over. So if they decide they're not going to fund the 109 shifts adequately, then you have a direct problem in the general fund for the sheriff and the probation department and so on. But that being said, you know, there's a lot of talk here about how low the county debt is and everything, but that discussion is kind of focused on the direct COP debt, and maybe there's some old obligation bonds there for some facilities, and it is relatively small. But you do have on top of that the pension obligation bonds, which are quite extensive when you put in the interest. And then you've got the utilities like the Nacimiento project. And I realize that everybody's saying, oh, that's an obligation of the ratepayers. There's no way you could penetrate into the county government. But if something did go wrong, we'd see, and it could be a problem. And then you're about to take down a couple of $89 million or so loans for the sewer project. And I think when it's all in and you add all the different kinds up, and it's not really displayed in any one place, but you can extract it from the CAFR, it's about $801 million with interest, and it'll be more when you take down the sewer loans. So it is quite big, and one of the things that might be helpful, if you just had a general session in here and talked about all the different kinds and how they work and what would happen if there were some kind of payer revolt out there on the Nacimiento water. And people couldn't make it. So, it's kind of like looking at this through a keyhole right now. What's the big picture? How is that going to work?
Thank you, Mr. Brown. With that, I'll bring it back, close public comment, bring it back to the board, and call for a motion.
Go ahead.
I'll move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded staff's recommendation.
Under discussion, thank the auditor's office for their outstanding work on this.
Yeah,
the long-term, our ability to weather this downturn as it's been has been the culture of prudent financial management going back many, many years. And, our debt load is conservative. Our ability to management is excellent. I appreciate the auditor finding this opportunity to make it more solid.
So yeah, we're in a good saving $220,000 a year. Good work.
Yeah.
Thank you. And obviously the Fitch rating is quite pleased with our status, despite what Mr. Brown may have to say about it. So, Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. DeShera.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes. Okay. And let's see. We'll continue to move along in our agenda hearing. Item number 28, Madam Clerk, please introduce that item.
That's a submittal of a resolution amending the 2010, 2011, and 2012 action plans for the urban county of San Luis Obispo to reallocate community development block grant funds and allocate emergency solutions grant funds all districts.
Okay, Supervisor Hill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to step down on this item.
Okay. Thank you. And with that, I'll ask Mr. Lilly to present the staff report, or at least kick it off.
I'll kick it off, if you don't mind. Dana Lilly, with your planning staff. Two of our staff will make the presentation today, Susan Adai and Morgan Terrell.
Okay, very good. Ms. Terrell?
Good morning, Chairperson Patterson and members of the board. Morgan Terrell, planning staff. We are asking you today to adopt the attached resolution as included in Exhibit A of your staff report and to approve a budget adjustment to include $15,870 of additional ESG funds. Suzanne will start the presentation to talk about the CDBG reallocations and the resolution amendment, and I will finish up the presentation to talk about the Emergency Solutions Grant Program.
Thanks, Morgan. Good morning. Suzanne Adai, County Planner. And this is a request that your board approve CDBG reallocations for three projects and also approve the related amendments to 2010, 2011, and 2012 action plans. The first reallocation is by the City of Paso Robles to reallocate approximately $25,000 in 2010 CDBG funds for a sidewalk construction project at Turtle Creek Park. The second reallocation is by the City of Atascadero, and they would like to transfer about $30,000 in 2011 CDBG funds from program administration to architectural barrier removal project. And the third request is by the City of San Luis Obispo to reduce its 2012 CDBG allocations by $70,000, which brings the total CDBG allocation for the City of San Luis Obispo to about $506,000. And finally, we are asking your board to approve a revised resolution for the North County connection to remove an escrow condition for them. The escrow condition was for the North County connection to close escrow by May 12 for a site acquisition. And we think that the North County connection needs more time to provide income information, and also they recently obtained additional funding from the City of Atascadero, including $100,000 in affordable housing in lieu funds for their project. So this ends the reallocation of CDBG funds portion, and I will turn it to Morgan Terrell, and she will talk more about the action plans amendments.
Morgan Terrell, planning staff. I'll talk about the Emergency Solutions Grant Allocations, or ESG. In December, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, released new regulations for this program. It used to be called the Emergency Shelter Grant. And with the release of the new regulations, HUD also released two additional allocations of funds for the county, one for 2011 and one for 2012. In order to make these funds available to the county, we must complete the substantial amendment to allocate funds to general activities and to describe the provisions of how the program will be run. The 2011 allocation is $51,572, and the 2012 allocation is $71,737. And these second allocations must be used for the activities you see here, which are rapid rehousing, and that's providing financial assistance and supportive services basically to people that are already homeless. There's homelessness prevention activities, so people at risk of becoming homeless, homeless management information system, and administration activities. The planning department held three workshops and an additional meeting with interested agencies to discuss how the fund should generally be allocated and how the program should be run. This slide shows the outcome of meeting with these agencies for the 2011 ESG allocation. Again, this is a general allocation of funds to activities that HUD prescribes. So there's rapid rehousing rental assistance, for example, is one activity. And 5% of the allocation is set aside for HMIS activities. And here is the 2012 allocation that was a result of these meetings. So again, it's pretty similar. The focus too is rapid rehousing. The group and the federal government have realized that the funds are best used for rapid rehousing activities, but that homelessness prevention is also an important component. The next step is to bring a funding recommendation to your board for specific programs and nonprofit agencies that will implement the ESG program for the activities you're approving today. So the ones you're approving today are just general HUD activities. And the Homeless Services Oversight Council recently started reviewing grant applications for homeless funding so it can make funding recommendations to the county. A subcommittee of the HSOC did meet to review some funding applications for this program by nonprofit agencies, but the Planning Department is seeking additional input from the full HSOC before making a funding recommendation to your board. So, therefore, in the coming months, Planning will come back with a funding recommendation for specific nonprofit agencies and programs to implement this program. So staff recommends that your board adopt the attached resolution as described in your staff report and Exhibit A and approve a budget adjustment of $15,870 of additional 2011 ESG funds. This concludes my presentation. We're available for questions.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Terrell. Are there any questions
just
from my colleagues?
Briefly, if I might, in the very last slide, sure. Ms. Terrell, budget adjustment of $15,000 in ESG, I thought there were two sums that added up to much more than that. I've just maybe missed the...
Let me describe that. Go back to this.
Is there a slide that accompanies this?
Yeah, if
Madam
you
Clerk.
Project the slide, please. The $15,870 is additional funding from 2011 that was not previously budgeted. HUD, or the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, released a proposed 2011 ESG budget, including the second allocation of funds, and that was less, so it was $15,870 less than what we now have as what they finalized the budget as. So we have this amount, but we've already budgeted the 2012 second allocation. So everything's budgeted but this.
So the 122-odd thousand
correct.
Of the two is already funds in hand.
Correct,
and
yes.
Good. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. I see no further questions at this point, so I'll open it to the public. And we do have a few requests to speak on this item. We'll begin with Susan Warren, followed by Dan Cano.
Susan Warren, North County Connection. And again, I'm happy to see the board here. Some things happened recently. We're doing very, very well in moving forward. We're very excited. We do need that deadline extended. Simply because with the city's $100,000 that came to us, along with that was a little change in plans for us, which put us into a whole different category for low-income housing. Originally, the facility had an apartment, which is part of the original facility we have, and that has been changed by the city. That's a requirement for us now to have that as a low-income manager's unit. So it puts us into the category of low-income housing where before we had been as a public service. So that's going to take a little time with our application with the county to change that particular piece. But we're ready to move forward with our escrow with the city. So that's very exciting. We have a lot of support from them, and we're working diligently with the Watsons, who have been extremely patient. I had no idea this process keeps going over and over and over again, but we're moving forward, and I would appreciate your support in moving that deadline for us.
Do you have any idea of how much longer it'll take, Ms. Warren? Are we talking weeks, months?
Well, we're hoping in a month or so we can close the escrow for the Watsons because there is a balloon payment due on the property. And they also have people in the wings that would like to purchase the property. So the sooner the better. But we also we may have to find some alternative funding for right now in order to close the escrow and then receive the CDBG funding maybe by December because of the change that has to happen with that application for it to become they kind of essentially we have to reapply as a low income mm-hmm. project versus the public service project.
Very good. Okay, thank you. I do know Mr. Lilly and Mr. Navarro are extremely familiar with this project, and I know we're doing everything we can to make it work.
Right.
And I do appreciate the City of Atascadero and their contribution.
They've been wonderful.
Well.
Right.
Great thing. And Supervisor Meacham has
a question. Ms. Warren, you mentioned that there will be a balloon due. Are
right.
you guys prepared for that?
Well, we're going to have to shift some things to be able to close that escrow in time. If there's some donations that want to come in, there's some opportunities for some individual loans. We are working on that to make that payment. But if anybody'd like a tax-deductible donation, come our way to North County Connection.
There's no lack of requests for those, that's for sure.
Right.
Okay, Mr. Lilla, you had a comment?
I can add a staff perspective on that. It appears that the sellers will take paper, so they're helping finance it in the interim period, and then we'll have to change the eligible activity. That's what she's referring to, and we'll have to come back to your board and turn it from acquisition of a public facility to acquisition of affordable housing, and that all can happen between now and December, and then they can get that assistance and pay down whatever the sellers are taking back in paper.
Right. Very good, and I know that change in status makes more money available.
Yeah. Yes, it does, and it's a huge difference for us.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Ms. Warren. Let's see. Dan Cano, followed by Jeff Edwards.
I think he's on Oceano. Good morning, Chairman Patterson and members of the Board of Supervisors. My name is Dan Cano, and I'm Executive Director of the Central Coast Link. We're a nonprofit organization located in Atascadero, and we provide case management services and support to children, youth, and families throughout San Luis Obispo County, with an emphasis in North San Luis Obispo County. We also operate three family resource centers in San Miguel, Paso Robles, and Atascadero. I'm here today just to make a couple of brief comments about our recent proposal for ESG funds that was initially recommended for funding and then placed on hold due to concerns about a perceived conflict of interest. First, I'd like to say that I appreciate and support the Planning Department's desire to ensure that the integrity of the selection process for these funds is held to the highest standards. Any concerns over the integrity of this process should be taken very seriously. Having said that, it's also imperative that we protect the healthy competitive spirit of awarding grants to organizations in our county by awarding proposals that offer creative and collaborative approaches to their service delivery. This is the reason we look to nonprofits to implement community-based programs. As public benefit entities, we have unique ties to our communities, and we have a special obligation, especially when we receive public dollars, to use our close ties to our communities to continuously find creative ways to solve problems. And for the county, one of the best ways to challenge organizations to create visions for solving challenging problems is really through the bidding process. In this case, I believe the bidding process worked. The outcomes of this bidding process was two very distinct proposals. One proposal offered a countywide program with an emphasis on North County. The other offered a North County-only program. One program offered a collaborative approach that included its broad range of existing partners without asking them to do anything other than what the great work they're already doing. And the other, I believe, didn't specifically mention any other organizations. Our program went further and offered a vision to merge homeless services with our network of family resource centers to build capacity and leverage and a broader range and access a broader range of funds and services countywide. So in closing, I'd just like to encourage the board and any other individuals in our county to read the two proposals themselves and to come up with their own conclusions. If they'd like to call me or email me at the link, I'd be happy to email them a copy of ours. I'd also like to share my hopes that this process of reassessing the proposals can be cleared up as quickly as possible. Having been a case manager myself, serving at-risk families in our community, I can say with a fair amount of certainty that families and children who would benefit from this program will be negatively impacted each day that these funds are not made available. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cano. And Mr. Edwards, my mistake there, you're wanting to speak on the next item. Patricia Gomez. Ms. Gomez.
Good morning, Mord. I'm Patricia Gomez, and I was for 18 months your director for the Homeless Services Oversight Council. First, I want to commend your staff for all the work they have done in this short period of time. HUD gave them a huge plate to work with, and they have really helped to navigate through that process very well, so I do want to thank them very much. I am also kind of dismayed that we have not brought forward the recommendations for the ESG Rapid Rehousing and Prevention Funds. In the interest of full disclosure, I did consult with the link and on a volunteer basis on their proposal. That being said, I just want to make two points to you today. One is to get it done quickly. Yeah, the staff recommendation is that they go to the HSOC to get to full review of these. The HSOC meets next week, and then not again for a month and 2 months. So I would urge the board to ask them to consider it at their meeting next week so they can get back to you within by the 22nd. Delay means just more homelessness. Secondly, I just want to point out that these decisions and your investment in these funds does not occur in a vacuum. Annually you submit a continuum of care application to HUD. And in last year's application, what you said was to address family homelessness, you would require the involvement of schools and family resource centers in the design of a prevention and rehousing program, and that you were going to have greater linkages with family resource centers, HUD, housing authorities, and the schools. Youth are a big thing on HUD's radar screen right now, and there is a huge gap in our COC with the involvement of the schools and youth organizations. In our 3 pages of organizations listed as involved in the COC, there was 1 youth-oriented organization. Building capacity is essential. So that the link may not have previous history in this is actually a plus. So when you see this recommendation come before you, and I will urge also the HSOC to take these things into consideration, really ask, how do this investment of funds move us forward in the direction that we said we were going to do? Because your staff is going to be doing another COC application in September, October, and having assisted in that in the past 2 years, you want to be able to give them something to say that we have made progress in the direction that we said we were going to do. And indeed, we have made progress in ending homelessness. So thank you also, each one of you, for your concern and your interest on homelessness, because we are making a difference. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Gomez. I appreciate your comment. That concludes my request to speak in public comment on this item, so I'll close it to public comment and bring it back to the board. And Mr. Lilly, either you or Ms. Terrell might explain that we did have a bit of a change from the original recommendation that was coming forward, and it involves the process that the HSOC utilized, and so we're actually going back to HSOC for a full recommendation. Because of the timing, we had a subcommittee review the applications and make a recommendation without the full HSOC. So this effort allows us to take it back to the Homeless Services Oversight Council for the full board to consider. But that's just one item that is not in today's action, as I understand it. Mr. Lilly, would you fill us in on that, please?
Yes, that's correct. Due to the deadline imposed by HUD, there really wasn't time to go back to the full HSOC. The full HSOC was apprised of that. It had authorized a subcommittee to render recommendations to the county, which it did, and were part of the previous package for your board. At that point, one of the agencies, an agency that was not recommended for award of the funds, reviewed the proposals and saw what was either confusing or appeared to them to be a possible conflict in that the Lynx application referenced that the ECHO, the shelter in North County, was a partner. It wasn't; they weren't a co-applicant. They would just be part of this collaboration, but they expressed a concern about that and also that it didn't go back to the full HSOC. Normally, we would bring these back to the full HSOC, and in future years we'll do so. So the staff determined that we really didn't want a message to be sent out that the county doesn't consider all of these nonprofits to be our partners, and if they express a concern, that we'll take it seriously and be responsive. And so that's why we withdrew the recommendation for specific agencies at this point, but we'll be back in front of you as soon as we can to recommend the agencies. And that's it.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Lilly. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll have to say up front that homeless services is a topic area that I don't know in as much depth as I know other aspects of our efforts here. But I am struck by Ms. Gomez's comment that the delay in getting these funds out on the street to do their intended job does prolong the misery and the dysfunction that is attendant with homelessness. It's my understanding of the situation that this bump, if you will, that Mr. Lilly just described, comes from, one might say, the growing pains of trying to coordinate a large number of individual nonprofit agencies with the activities of at least a couple of different county departments. And I am hopeful that moving forward from this, we get matters of process ironed out so everyone is on the same page as to process, and that we instill a culture of collaboration and cooperation. Yes, I think a certain amount of competitiveness is not a bad thing, but it should be a healthy competitiveness. And I'm looking forward that under the leadership of our Department of Social Services, with policy direction from this board, that we make this particular system work better in the future. I'm looking forward to that.
Very good. Thank you for your comments, Supervisor Gibson. Supervisor Meacham.
And just as a follow-up to my colleague, I completely agree, and I think that's one of the reasons why we were so emphatic about hearing what these benchmarks are going to be. I hope that coordinator is the one that's going to pull the collaborative effort of all of the organizations together, because when they become more territorial, that's when we start having the difficulty for us to make these calls. And I also want to make clear that I think that if we find specific conflicts of interest, perceived conflicts of interest are as important as well, and those need to be addressed.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Meacham. And it is a complex issue. I mean, just dealing with all the federal criteria. I applaud the efforts of planning, and now we have the Department of Social Services engaging at a higher level as well, and I think these issues will get ironed out. And as the relatively new chair of HSOC, one of the things that the HSOC was charged with was making recommendations to this board, and they hadn't historically done that, and that's something that I want them to start doing. And we had a little procedural hiccup this last time because of the deadline, and we'll take a look at that and see how we can better address it. But we were working against a deadline that we thought was fixed, and I believe we've come to a satisfactory resolution with the way we're handling it now, and we will get back to this board as soon as possible. So with that, I need a...
I'll be happy to move staff's recommendation, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Second?
As amended by the court.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Gibson, seconded by Supervisor Teixeira. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes. Thank you. And we'll move on to our final item of today, board business, and Madam Clerk, if you would introduce that item, please.
That's item 29. It's consideration of, one, project status update on the Highway 1 at 13th Street Drainage Improvement Project in Oceano, two, approval of amendment number 4 to the Engineering Consulting Services Agreement with CSD Engineering Incorporated in the amount of $159,040 for design and construction support services, and three, authorize the Public Works Director to sign future amendments to the agreement in the amount not to exceed an additional contingency of $20,000, District 4.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Benedix from Public Works.
Yes, good morning. Good morning, Chairman Patterson, members of the Board of Supervisors, county staff, and members of the audience. I'm Dean Benedix, the Public Works Utilities Division Manager, and I wanted to make one correction. The amount of the amendment that's shown on the cover letter should be $159,440. We did make some corrections on the electronic submittal on the forms, and there's some inconsistencies between the title on the board letter and the agenda transmittal. The agenda transmittal is correct as it is there, except for that numerical change. We're here today to talk about one of my favorite things, flood control and drainage. I'd like to also indicate that we have Richard Howell here from the airports. Mr. Jeff Lee is a new project manager that's working in the utilities division. And from the consultant, we have two people here to support that from the CSD engineering if there are any questions with respect to that. Jeff, you want to? Okay. Why don't you let me have the mouse, please? The remote one? Yeah. Thank you. I'll go back. I'm going to start at the beginning here. Can't go back. Can you get me into the main PowerPoint first slide, Jeff? There's been historic chronic flooding at this area of Highway 1 in Oceano, contributing from the local drainage, and of course we've had a large problem with flooding last year in the winter of 2010. In 2004, we brought sort of a formal study to the board, the Oceano Drainage Study, which was one of six drainage studies. And the topic today, Highway 1 and 13th Street and at Paso Robles, was included in that study as one of several problem areas and solutions that were proposed from a generic sort of a sense. Also included in that study was a Highway 1 and 19th and 17th Street drainage problem, which is a little bit farther south on Highway 1. The project we're proposing to you today makes storage and provides capacity for the release and connection of a future project at 17th and 19th Street to the project we're proposing to discuss today. So that will come to you in a future time when we have funding and we've worked out some details on that project. On May 22nd, this month, we will bring to you an update on other ongoing drainage projects in the Oceano area, including the 2011 flood mitigation projects that we have completed and we propose to work on, as well as Meadow Creek project priorities and also the Oro Grande Creek Waterway Management Program. But those items will be, as I said, we will discuss later this month. This slide shows in the top right-hand corner an aerial view of the project site. And if you can see the blue, yellow, and red highlight points there, it shows some of the flooding on Highway 1 and also along the southern portion of this drainage area, which is up against the Arroyo Grande Creek levee. The bottom right photograph shows some flooding on airport property where RVs are stored, and we have a lease. Airports has a lease for those. And also a little bit farther to the north or the west where there's flooding along the Arroyo Grande Creek levee, actually on the airport property. The drainage pattern in the area, just generally, the local area contributes flooding or contributes stormwater to the area on Highway 1 at 13th Street. And Caltrans maintains that cross gutter. Basically there's a low spot in the street, and there's continued drainage facilities that are basically of a very rudimentary form of a series of open channels, some pipelines, some small ponds that detain water and surface flow that directs the water and allows the water to flow to the west, sort of along Fountain Avenue, which is on the north side of the airport, as well as to the south, to the Rio Grande Creek levee, which basically berms up the flooding in that area. And that water also flows to the west to the island area of Oceano, which is the area we had flooding, significant flooding in winter of 2010. So our purpose of this project at 13th Street and Highway 1 is to reduce the frequency of flooding specifically at 13th Street and Highway 1 and to lessen these flows and collect these flows that migrate to the west and flood the Oceano Island and other areas and reduce that flow to Meadow Creek, which is to the west, and help mitigate the flooding problems there. We met with Caltrans after we obtained some significant funding from them and came up with some options and alternatives. Caltrans is interested in this project. It's kind of interesting. When I proposed the drainage study that we did in 2004, we went to Oceano Community. Their major criticism was, well, now you got a solution. Where's the money to fix anything? And we didn't have any money at that time. We actually did ask Caltrans if they had any funding to support doing a project in this area, and they basically said no. A couple of years ago, they came back to us and said we have some minor roads or minor funding that they could contribute to the project in the amount of about $900,000. And based on that, we were able to do some initiated alternatives, review those with them, and came up with the solution that you see before you, which is basically a series of pipes which capture the water at 13th Street and take the shortest route toward the Rio Grande Creek levee. Just to point out, in these locations, we have some easements that we need to gain across some private property, which are the agricultural shed processing area. We have to get an easement under the railroad to put a pipeline under the railroad. We also need to utilize a portion of the airport property, which is up against the levee where they currently store some RVs that I mentioned previously. And a small portion of this right near the outlet along Delta Street, which you can barely see, but it's the triangular portion that's all green there where the outlet is. That portion is in the coastal zone, so we have some issues with that also. We discussed this with the airport. There's a couple of memos in your package that indicate our discussions and conversations to clarify where we have been, what we need to do, and the process that we believe we need to go through. We've also discussed it with Zone 11A and Oceano Advisory Group, advising them that this project is one that we support and would like to move forward with. The major project constraints, and one of the reasons that we're here, is because the requirements for using the Oceano Airport property for the detention storage and to cross the property with underground pipes requires a modification of the airport layout plan. That's a formal document that the airport has on file and is, I guess, conforms to the master plan for the airport. In conjunction with that, we need to have an environmental document, a NEPA document done for airport land use. And we need to address the airport revenue impacts, as we will. The detention facility that we propose against the levee will reduce probably a row of RVs, which would reduce some storage and some revenue to the airport. We have the other normal environmental requirements of Coastal Commission, CEQA, and the regulatory permitting, as well as design and permitting issues, which do include a bore, as I mentioned, under the Union Pacific Railroad to get our pipeline through that location. The major constraint that one of the reasons we wanted to come here to board is to discuss the timing. The Caltrans funding that we have for a minor project is approximately $900,000. The deadline that Caltrans currently has given us to award a contract is June 2014. We're going to be having significant difficulty getting a contract awarded by that time because of the process, particularly that the airport layout plan, the NEPA approval, and the FFA approval and processing that we need to move forward with the program that we have. to mitigate that or address that. We're going to try to do as many items in parallel as we can. We have the airport with us to have their consultant help us through this process. And Caltrans has, when we identified some significant timing issues, they did give us an extension of a year from June 2013 to June 2014 to extend that $900,000. And they are supportive of the design that we have here, and we hope that they will be able to advance that if we end up with a problem with timing and putting the project out to bid. Things can get worse. We hope they don't. But the only worst case, the one I just gave you, is that the Coastal Commission could appeal this project late in the process. That could potentially kick the project out almost 9 months longer from what I showed on the previous slide. That likely still would be maybe within a year. So if we could get an extension from Caltrans for an additional year on their funding, that would potentially mitigate this problem depending on how much time that takes. So these are kind of worst-case scenarios, but our best guesses at this point in time. The mostly good news on the project budget is we have approximately $2.6 million for project construction, which includes $266,000 for contingency. We hope to maximize the efficiency and maybe make some adjustments in the project to cut that price down if we can, because overall we have about a $385,000 shortfall that we've identified at this point based on the funding sources that we have to date. The Caltrans FY 2013-14 minor program is the $900,000 that I mentioned that currently we have an understanding that June 2014 is when that money would be good through. We hope to extend that. Within the next couple of weeks, the Public Works Department will bring the SLOCOG State Highway Account Urban and Regional Funding Request for this project to you. And the Community Development Grant Block funding is also available without timing, although we need to move the project process along as soon as we can. So our recommendations to you today are to approve and execute Amendment 4 to the CSD consultant contract to allow us to proceed with design so we can start these subsequent items as quickly as possible, and to order the approve the Public Works Director to assign future amendments to a total of $20,000. We also request your support for Public Works and Airport to work together to make the modifications to the Oceano Airport layout plan and the subsequent documents and processing that we'll need to provide. And that's the end of my presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Benedict. Questions from my colleagues? I see none, so I'll open it to the public. And I have one request to speak, Mr. Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Board members, good morning. My name is Jeff Edwards. On December 19, 2010, residents, businesses, and the sanitation district in Oceana was flooded with stormwater. At the sand district, hundreds of thousands of gallons of raw sewage spilled into the local neighborhood they called the island. It's been almost 18 months since then, and contrary to what you heard from staff, virtually nothing has been done. And I'm anxious to hear the report on May 22nd because perhaps I'll be corrected, but as far as I know, no physical on-the-ground improvements have been made in connection with any Oceano flooding. Much focus has been turned to the Arroyo Grande Waterway Management Plan, and that $5 million plus project is going forward, but it wasn't the problem in December of 2010. The county-owned airport was complicit in the flooding of 2010. The matter before you today, the Highway 1 and 13th Street, is another make-work, consultant-centric contract that is a $2.6 million Band-Aid. It's not a solution. The best case is the permit will take years, and the Caltrans funding won't last that long. We know that. The project is to use part of the airport property to build a basin, construct a pipeline, and connect it all up with Arroyo Grande Creek. It's amazing. Ironically, General Services in the Airport Division, their biggest concern is the loss of revenues because of the RVs that are stored there. Just so your board knows, the total revenue, and this is according to the staff report, for the Oceano Airport is $45,000 a year. This is $3,750 a month. And over 80% of that revenue is for storage. Basically, you have RVs and hangars filled with personal property, motorcycles, cars. You're operating an airport that's really a storage facility. And it's hard to comprehend. Don't sell off the acre or the airport 1 acre at a time, and don't operate it as a mini storage facility. Look at the airport land in a comprehensive and holistic way to solve the Highway 1 and 13th Street drainage problem, as well as other drainage problems in the community. Improve the entire community-wide drainage with the airport land that is currently being misused. Don't waste money, even if it's grant funds, or other monies in this superficial project. Don't forget about the State Water Board and the notice of violation that's pending and the millions of dollars potentially in fines that are coming down. Who's going to pay for that? And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to close simply by saying that I am unaware of any pilot or pilots that showed up when Oceana was flooded in December 2010 to help them out. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. And with that, I'll bring it back to the board. Supervisor Gibson.
I certainly defer to the supervisor of the district, but I had a question, if I might, and that was on the matter of the Caltrans funding. I noticed in the Exhibit A, which is the estimated budget, there are, as always, a fair number of dollars spent in soft costs, right-of-way acquisition, et cetera. And I'm wondering, are there strings on the Caltrans budget that would, or the Caltrans funding that would prohibit it from going to the front loading of costs for this, to get this project teed up?
No, that funding will be based upon an agreement that we execute with them that we're in the process of preparing at this point in time.
But they're not indicating ahead of that this, for instance, has to be reserved for the construction phase?
The environment? Well, I know they pay for the project. Their project funds do pay for the soft costs also. Okay. I don't know that there's any timing issues that we have regarding how those happen.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Supervisor Meacham.
I just have a question. On that same page where the total estimated expenditures below that, project funding sources Caltrans fiscal year 2013 to 2104, minor projects. Is that accurate?
Oh, that's a mistake. It should be 2014.
Okay. I was going to say, we're not going to be around to see that.
Long-term thinking, Mr. Meacham.
Supervisor Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson. This has been a project that's long before my tenure on this board, and I think that we've got a working group down there now that is actually doing something that's very viable for the community. I'd like to commend not only the county and public works staff, but the staff at OCSD, Caltrans, and the railroad for the ability to work together to solve a problem that has beleaguered Oceano for many years. This may not be the best situation, but when you've got infrastructure already established and things there that you have to go around, this is the best situation to do with what we've got. And I would move staff's recommendation to approve this project and get this thing off the ground.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Staff's recommendation. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Sharon.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes. Okay. And that concludes our open session today. We'll go into closed session. I want to remind the listening audience that there will be no afternoon session today. But we do go into closed session. I'll open it to public comment. Have no request to speak, so I'll close it to public comment and ask Mr. Jensen for an estimate on time in closed session.
About 40 minutes.
Okay, thank you. So we'll adjourn to closed session, reconvene here just to report out after closed session.